Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show and your source for cool jazz and more. WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. At 10:30 this morning, the Baltimore State's Attorney Marilyn Mosby is having a press conference talking to the entire press. Well, as soon as we know about that, we'll let you know what's happening with that and hear more about that as we hear this unfold this morning. But the state's attorney has dropped all charges against remaining officers, which also means the gag order has been lifted. Baynard Woods, who's reporting for the Guardian newspaper, has been covering this trial every day pretty intensely and joins us by phone right now. And Baynard, welcome. Good to have you with us, brother.
Hey, thanks a lot, Mark.
So tell us what happened.
There wasn't much. It was one sentence. We were expecting this Castigar hearing where they were going to have to see whether Miller's compelled testimony against Nero was going to whether they had built their case upon that and whether they infringed upon his Fifth Amendment right. And Deputy Chief State's Attorney Michael Schatzo stood up and said, the state has one preliminary order of business. We're offering a no process on all remaining charges. And then shortly after said, in all of the remaining cases.
So, and 10:30, the press conference is taking place, correct?
Yes, yeah. I'm in a car on my way right there right now. Marilyn Mosby is having a press conference at the site where Freddie Gray was arrested at 10:30.
Wow.
And then we're expecting the defense to also have, the defense lawyers to have their own press conference after that, but they wanted to wait until after the state had spoken.
Well, we'll go ahead and do what you got to do, and maybe we'll get in touch with you in the next hour, so at 11 o'clock, if you're free some point, we can talk to you about what you just heard.
Okay, that sounds great.
Thanks a lot, Mark. Baynard Woods with The Guardian. Tom Moronic is online, who's joined us from time to time as an attorney covering this trial. Tom, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Mark, it's always a pleasure to be on with you.
So talk a bit about what you think this is happening from your legal perspective. I know others may disagree a little bit sometimes, but what are you seeing here?
Well, I think this is the right move based on her evaluation of the evidence. I think she saw that unless she had something different to prove, it would be very difficult to get guilty verdicts in the other cases. And I think she sort of saw the writing on the wall that it was going to be a very uphill climb. And it's a tough case, tough decision that a prosecutor has to make in any case, whether or not to drop the charges if you feel you're not going to get the verdict. And I think she weighed all of those things and really made the right decision.
So what does it mean? It's huge, though. I mean, the fact that she's having a press conference at the site itself where Freddie Gray was arrested.
I think she wants to explain this to the people who elected her. I think she wants to explain exactly why she's doing this. And I think she wants to probably, and again, I'm just speculating here, but probably say that even though Freddie Gray passed away, the decision was made on legal grounds and it's not being made on anything other than just the standard of law. I think that's probably the symbolism there if I had to speculate.
Hmm. Well, this is, when the gag order is lifted, so it also means that the state's attorney can now say what she's been wanting to say about this case and why it's been so difficult for her to prosecute.
Yes, absolutely. One of the things that the gag order does is it means that the defense and the state can't comment on things such as evidence that's been kept out, discovery that was found to be in violation.
Right.
There's all sorts of issues that we did not hear the official reaction on. All we heard was essentially commentators like myself and like the great people you had in your show, Mark. But now we'll actually get to hear sort of the ins and outs of this. This will be a very interesting day, I would say.
Okay, well, I appreciate you taking your time, Tom, and we'll be talking to you at least tomorrow and the next day to see where all this is. So,
absolutely.
Thanks so much.
Of course, Mark.
Take care. Bye-bye. Tom Moronic, who also has his own radio show on WCBM, as well as being an attorney here in town. And I will get one caller in here, and maybe I think that our guest Charlie Carter has something she might want to say as well. We'll get her the voice up. Leo? You're on the air.
Yes. Good morning, Mark Steiner.
Good morning, Leo Burrows. How are you, brother?
Well, I'm not feeling good about putting Marilyn Mosby on trial. I'm not feeling good about it at all because I feel, based on the information that I received from Brother Chris Bush, a community organizer now living in Kentucky, that Judge Barry Williams was a pro-cop judge, and as a pro-cop judge originally appointed by Governor Robert Ehrlich, and having the support of Democrats, such as Judge Mary Ellen Barbera, a partisan Democrat, it appears to me that the fix was in from the very, very beginning. There's a lot of hatred and resentment surrounding Marilyn Mosby to the extent that she's young, she's accused of being brash and much too courageous, and they said, we've got to get even with this lady. So you've got people like Attorney Warren Brown, who's cheerleading for the Baltimore Police Department, and you've got others who have charged her formally. There are lawsuits, as you know, pending against Marilyn Mosby for frivolous prosecution, et cetera, et cetera. So again, you've turned the tables, and what's more outrageous and makes me more angry is that the corporate leadership, in my opinion, the Greater Baltimore Committee and the Baltimore Development Corporation and the rich white money that is promoting the Under Armour and Port Covington deal are also pro-cop, and they're supporting the attacks on Marilyn Mosby, i.e. the fraternal order of police.
Right. Let me just a couple.
Nationally.
I appreciate the call, Leo. We have to jump out to our other caller and some other things, but let me just point out that no one is suing Marilyn Mosby at the moment. People are threatening lawsuits, but no one's suing Marilyn Mosby. That's not happening. And I think that sometimes in our anger over what happens with the police attacks on the black community that, you know, we leap to things like Barry Williams is pro-cop and he's not a good judge, and I don't think that's the case either. I mean, I think Barry Williams is from most lawyers' accounts, defense and prosecution, is a decent, fair judge. I think that the issue is that the law is on the police side, not necessarily the judge, but the law itself, the way we have to prosecute. I think that's part of the problem. What do you want to say, Melody?
Well, this is Melody Simmons from the Baltimore Business Journal.
I didn't introduce
that's okay. No worries. It's a big day. And I will say that this is a case that has a lot of emotion to it. And there has been a gag order on. The gag order is now lifted. And we will start to see and hear some of the evidence that we had not seen before. The dots will be connected in the coming days. So there's a lot of question. It's very emotional. This is going to be a very emotional day in Baltimore. So this is what we're facing right now. But the truth will come out.
And it will come out. And we are now calling Marilyn Mosby's office, hoping we can get her to join us here the next few days to talk about what just happened, as well as continue this conversation with our guests here. And I think that we were two things. A, I'm going to get to the phone here and get another caller and hear Charlie Carter, what she has to say. But A, we are going to talk about this for the next few minutes, but then go to what we were going to talk about, which is Port Covington, which to me is not necessarily disconnected from this whole story and of where we're going. So we're going to get into all that in just a moment. Tomorrow we'll get into this more deeply in the second hour. The guests we were going to have debating, we're trying to get them now to come and debate this issue instead, because I think this is huge. I mean, this is a major thing. It's going to be national, international news. Focus will be on Baltimore again. That is very critical. Before I introduce Carl Stokes to talk about Port Covington, Charlie Carter is also in the house here, who's the executive director of Maryland Working Families. And I'm also going to get Kenneth running to get your call in here. What's your initial thought and reaction to all this, Charlie?
Well, I think what Melody says is true, that the most important thing that happens today is that the gag order is released, is lifted, and we get to hear from the state's attorney, you know, what's been going on behind the scenes. I want us to just say, from Maryland Working Families' perspective, that we applaud Marilyn Mosby. She did a very courageous thing by indicting these officers. Across the country, there's been so much police violence against citizens, particularly African Americans, and there aren't even indictments. So that this young, newly elected state's attorney was brave enough and moved enough by the evidence that she found to do an indictment, I think we should applaud her for doing it, because that moves the ball forward. I think many people in this city always felt it would be a long shot to actually convict officers because of exactly what you said, Mark. The law is on their side. And the, you know, Police Officers Bill of Rights gives them great protections. I also want to point out that during this gag order, the FOP has been relentless in their attacks on Marilyn Mosby, and she's not even been able to defend herself. And I'm really interested in what she has to say, not just about the case, but really in defending herself and her attorneys in that office that have been working on this for over a year. Finally, I just want to say this will be a big day in Baltimore.
Yes.
The eyes never really left Baltimore. The eyes of the world never really left Baltimore from last year when we had the uprising. Now, in that year, we've had, you know, promises made to our communities, promises recanted from our communities. We've had, you know, leaders who have been newly elected. We have the Democratic National Convention going on. We've had the Bernie movement. We've had, you know, the you know, burgeoning activism. I think that what happens today and tonight at the Port Covington hearing will really be a crossroads for Baltimore City.
So let me bring in a conversation now. You heard Charlie Carter, who's executive director of Maryland Working Families, and Melody Simmons, who's reporter for the Baltimore Business Journal, who covers real estate and economic development and has been one of our outstanding reporters here for the last three decades. And always good to have her in the studio.
It's great to be here.
And we're now joined by Councilman Carl Stokes, who represents the 12th District in the Baltimore City Council and is chair of the Taxation, Finance, and Economic Development Committee, which is having the hearing tonight about Port Covington. Carl, good to have you on the air with us.
Glad to be with all of you. Thank you, Mark.
And so to begin, there's so much things, so much stuff is going on at once here, but I think it's really important not to lose sight of what you are doing tonight and what's going to happen at your hearing. And what time it is and where it is. So what is happening tonight?
So tonight we're hearing three bills around the TIF, the tax increment finance.
It's at 5 o'clock tonight, right?
It's at 5. We actually are going to start at 5:30. The doors will open at 4:30. And we originally had scheduled it for 5, but apparently there's a meeting before our meeting. And so the breakdown and setup won't allow us to begin the hearing until 5:30. So we will begin at 5:30. It's in the War Memorial Building, by the way.
Not City Hall. Okay, right.
Not in City Hall,
right,
where it generally is, because we're expecting such a large turnout of citizen participation that we've moved it across the street from City Hall, and folks can enter from Lexington Street. The building's at Gay and Lexington Street. Folks would enter on the Lexington Street side. On-the-street parking is going to be difficult at that time because many of the streets are curb lanes are closed because of 4 to 6 restrictions. There is a garage right across from the
right across,
Memorial.
Right.
It's not a free garage, but there is a garage which will be empty at that time because most of the workers will have left at that hour.
So what are you doing tonight at the hearing?
At the hearing, we're going to be hearing the evidence that would lead us to vote for a tax subsidy. Let me take out the word tax. A subsidy to the Port Covington development, the Sagamore development team, who are asking the citizens of Baltimore for $660 million in the short term. I say in the short term because what happens is the city will take out a loan by floating bonds and give that money to the infrastructure and other things, not just the roads, but also to build. They want to spend $180 million in parks and other amenities there. And at the end of the day, it will cost the taxpayer about $1.4 billion because the citizens have to pay the interest on the loan that they take out.
But so let me ask a political question here, and I have all of you chime in. I mean, one of the things that we've heard from a number of sources right now, from inside City Hall and from people who work at City Hall, is that the president of City Council, Jack Young, has pushed not your hearing, which is taking place today.
Yes.
But it's pushed the vote up from August 29th to August the 1st,
August
which,
8th.
August the 8th. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Which
right. And I, of course, as I think, of course, the best source would be the president himself.
Well, he doesn't want to talk to me.
Yeah.
He's out of town.
When he's in town.
No, he's in town. And I feel that we're pushing this, rushing this. The president, I received a call from the president's office saying that there would be a special meeting on August the 8th for Port Covington to bring it to the floor. That wasn't my understanding of what would happen, frankly. I have not spoken to the president since I got that call a week or so ago, 10 days ago.
Right.
And I haven't spoken to the president, not that I haven't tried, but I haven't spoken to him.
So,
Yes. So I think there are a number of things. One, there is no independent analysis of this entire deal. And I don't think that the council should even be holding a hearing on the deal without having an independent analysis on hand telling us exactly what these numbers mean and are they correct. The only numbers we have are the numbers that Sagamore Development gave us themselves. Now, there will be a company here tonight who has done an independent review of the numbers. It's not the same as a total analysis, but they will be here tonight to speak to that. They were retained by the Build organization,
right,
and they will be coming in tonight to speak to that. MuniCap will also be here, who did, quote-unquote, their review of the Sagamore numbers. Let me mention that in Howard County, they have a TIF before their county council, and their county council chairman has insisted that he will not hold a hearing on their TIF proposal until there is an independent analysis of the numbers, the same thing that I and others are asking for the Baltimore TIF.
So I just want to get back to the studio here for a minute. Don't go away, Carl. But so let me bring Melody and Charlie back into the conversation.
Well, I had seen that they were holding that special meeting. I called Lester Davis last week and asked him, what's on the agenda? And Lester did not – I asked him point blank, is the Port Covington legislation coming up for a vote? And he said no. And he said it was five other bills that the council had to consider that were hanging loose. And so that's what the spokesman for Jack
said
Young
said there would not be a vote on August the 8th.
That's what he told me on the phone. Specifically, I asked him point blank, and he said no. Now, Carl has heard something different from the council, from Councilman Council President Young's office. So there's a discrepancy here about what's really going on and when votes will be taken. And this kind of adds a little to the angst that's going on around this issue as well.
Charlie Carter.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more with Melody, and I couldn't agree more with Councilman Stokes. This is moving way too fast. And just this game of musical chairs about when the vote is going to take place, this is the same kind of lack of transparency that the critics of this proposal have been talking about since the beginning of this process. The next largest TIF, $500 million in Albuquerque, New Mexico, it took their council 18 months to really review and consider the proposal. Why are we trying to move this in 3 months?
And the question is that I think the question, please do join us at 410-319-8888. We want your thoughts. I know people are obsessed right now with the issue of the tribe, which we'll be talking about today, later, and tomorrow. But this is also, they're not disconnected. This is equally important for the future of our city and where we're going. And the hearing is tonight. The question is, here's what I'm going to ask a political question. Who's rushing this? Why are we rushing this? Why? What is the logic? If this, as Kevin Plank says, if this is going to take to 2040, when he will be an older man, and I may or may not be even here, but if it's going to take that long, then what is the rush on the TIF without an analysis? I mean, one of the things. Well, I'll stop there because I have a second point to that, but. Melody, what are you going to say?
What we've heard so far on that issue, the answer is that this council and this mayoral term will be wrapping up in very early December, December 2nd. And the, quote, rush, end quote, one of the things we heard was that this process will have to begin again under the new mayor and the new council if it is not passed.
And they don't want that because why?
Well, I think there's new legislation. I mean, there's new legislators, and I think there's some concern about having to start again and air it. That's what I'm hearing from that as well.
But the reality is what's happening in Carl's committee and what's happening in the Baltimore Brew and what's happening in your reporting in the BBJ and the kinds of things have been raised in, by community leaders, Lawrence Brown, who couldn't be here today because she's preparing for tonight. I mean, the reality is there are a lot of questions and a lot of possibilities of alternatives here, Charlie Carter, that deserve to be heard as you figure out how this is going to develop.
Absolutely, absolutely. We actually came out the day after the election and called on the city council to hold up making a decision on this. Eight people on the city council will not be here next year when they won't be around when the first shovel goes in the ground on this. They won't be around to be accountable. And we really felt strongly. And I want to say the majority of the newly elected council members coming in said they wanted to be part of the discussion. They're getting educated now just at the same time that regular people are. I also want to say that when you talk to council members, they're not educated on the details of this.
They don't know.
That the details have been so secretive. As Carl just said, as Councilman Stokes just said, there's been no independent financial analysis. We've been given something and saying, take it or leave it, believe it or not.
And because a few people, I mean, I don't know how many people in the city council have read the entire document. I know that Mark
it's
Reuter
massive.
Has. I know Lawrence Brown has. Other people, some people have done their analysis by going through it page by page. But most people have not read it. And as you said to us, Carl, last time you were here, the city council does not have the staff to do the analysis that you think needs to be done.
True. We should have, frankly, contracted or should still contract with an outside independent analysts, and there are a couple here in the local area. There are people who are nationally known. For example, the person that Bill used is nationally known working with developers. He's not a guy who's, or the company is not a company that works against TIFs. They actually work and consult to those who are bringing proposals for TIFs. So this is a guy and a company who is completely objective, and as a matter of fact, has taken a number of calls and hits because they did do an objective analysis. Having said that, the council absolutely, just as the Howard County Council says, we're not looking to go forward with the TIF until we have our own independent analysis done. Why must the Baltimore City Council be different than other jurisdictions in terms of being thorough and doing due diligence?
So let's go back to the phones, 410-319-8888 to hear your thoughts on all this. Let's go to who has been holding on the longest. Is Mr. Bay, you've been holding on the longest. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning, Mr. Steiner. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you.
You know, what I find is that these elected officials like Jack Young, who come to the black community for votes to get voted right into office, you know, they then turn around and do things that benefit developers, who take something from the city but give very little back to its constituents who need it the most. I mean, you have billion-dollar developments right down in Harbor West. Do you think they would have taken the time to create an initiative where they could get a labor pool from the projects that's less than a mile away, maybe doing something that could train and give some of those gentlemen and ladies in the projects some sort of skills or some sort of training program that could integrate them into the workforce that's developing a lot of these developments. And it would cost them a pittance to do things like that.
I agree.
But then you have council members or city people like Jack Young who want to rush this thing through at the benefit of the developers. And ultimately, these projects do very little to help the members of the community who need the help the most. That's what my biggest concern is.
Mr. Bear.
And I applaud Carl Stokes because he seems to be the only person that's in the city council that has a rational thought to holding some of these people accountable and saying, oh, not so fast. You know, they want to do these things really quick. And then once they're in law, you can't do anything to undo them. You know, so I think that's why they want to have a vote so quick about it.
I appreciate
thank you for having me.
No, thank you for calling. We're going to take a short break and come right back. And Bill, you're the next caller up. We'll come back to our guests here. And one of the things I want to talk about is when we get back is the fact that Kevin Plank calls this the shining new city. And it will be. And I think this is in some ways a great visionary project. Well, the music's on, so I'll say that when I come back. But it's a great visionary project. But it's exclusive, not inclusive. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner here with Charlie Carter, Executive Director of Maryland Working Families, Melody Simmons, who reports on real estate and economic development for the Baltimore Business Journal, and Councilman Carl Stokes, who is chairing the Taxation, Finance, and Economic Development Committee that will hold the Port Covington hearing tonight at the War Memorial Plaza. Not the plaza, but at the War Memorial Building. It's too hot to be doing outside. At the War Memorial Building at 5:30. It should be starting around 5:30 tonight. So be there. It's going to be jammed, so get there early. If you want to be part of that, you should be in there early. And we also talked about the breaking news that State Attorney Marilyn Mosby has dropped all charges. As we speak, she's about to start her press conference at the very site where Freda Gray was arrested. We'll hear more about that at 11 o'clock and what happened with that. And hopefully we can get State's Attorney Mosby to join us sometime in the next four or five working day shows here to get her on here to talk about what happened, which we're going to be working on, and to hear her voice, a voice I think in many ways has been much maligned by so many people in the media and the attack. And I think it has a lot of subtext to it that's not always – well, maybe it is blatant. So anyway – number here is 410-319-8888. On our way back to our conversation, Jeff Singer has called in, who joins us many times. And he's only going to be here for a few minutes because he's on his way somewhere. But, Jeff, thanks for calling in. Let me ask you this. One of the things I said before we went to break, which was that Kevin Plank's vision for Port Covington really is, I think, visionary and really is a beautiful futuristic vision of what a city can look like. The problem is that the vision, just like what's happening right now with Johns Hopkins giving their doctors, not other employees, their physicians, when you look at who's allowed to get those the money, I'm being clear to you all.
Nurses too.
What Johns Hopkins just did was said that they will allow certain people who work for them, full-time employees at the hospital, the university, but part-time employees, house staff, and others cannot partake. They give them $36,000 to buy housing where poor working class people used to live and were pushed out, and now people can buy in. But the people who used to live there cannot get back in. So what I'm saying to say that is—
they can, but it's very expensive.
Very, very expensive. Mm-hmm. Not the way the economic model is built now. The problem with the vision is these visions, Jeff Singer, are always exclusionary. They're not inclusionary.
Well, that's right. And we heard a lot of talk that after the Freddie Gray experience, we would have one Baltimore and a new way of looking at the world and of doing politics and economics. What we've seen now time and time again since April of 2015 is that the old way is still dominant. The old way of thinking is still dominant. The people with wealth continue to get more wealth, and the folks who don't have wealth are being left out. Port Covington is just one more example. Dropping the charges against the police. Poor Freddie Gray woke up one morning, now he's dead, nobody's responsible. It's the same old white supremacy ruling class that pushes everyone else aside, and I hope we all rise up against it.
I know this is we are at a really critical juncture here in this city and in this country, but we could have more control over what's happening here locally than we do what's happening nationally.
Let's make a statement with Port Covington. It's a small statement, but if we could make this so-called visionary development into something inclusionary that benefits everyone in Baltimore, benefits the 99%, benefits the 67,000 households that can't pay their rent every month, benefits folks living on the street, and the city says they don't have the money to help them. We could do this. There's so much money in the city, it just doesn't circulate to everyone. You know, Kevin Plank just had to sell some stock. Under Armour just, and now the paper reported on this, they just had to sell some of their Class B stock. They had to give money to the owners of the Class B stock. Well, Kevin Plank owns more than 20 million shares of that stock, and from that dividend, he just earns $4.5 million. Not doing any work, just because the company had to give a dividend. All right, let's turn that $4.5 million into something good for all the people in Baltimore who have made it possible for that wealth to be created.
Well, Jeff, I think there's two levels
Melody
here.
Simmons.
Yeah, we have the business angle going on here. Under Armour is a corporation. It's publicly traded. Their annual report is available to anybody. You can go online and read it right now. So we have that. And then we have the other portion of this story, which is Sagamore Development, which is a part of Plank Industries, totally separate from the corporation. So Kevin Plank it's been told to us in the media that he is focusing on running his company. We have not really seen him or heard from him. I've requested an interview with him about the Port Covington and Sagamore Development project and have not even heard a response. So these are two separate things, and I don't think we should mix the two, but I'm just saying, I mean, he does own Sagamore Development, but he's not really part of the conversation.
Melody, I so respect your reporting. And by the way, Charlie, it's good that you're there because I really respect the organizing you're doing. And Chairman Stokes, you've been a leader in this matter for a long time. We appreciate that. But I need to point out, for example, William Domhoff, the great sociologist, has shown that there really is a small number of people in the U.S. and in any city in the U.S. who use their power and wealth to perpetuate this class distinction. And whether we talk about Under Armour or Sagamore, these connections are, many of them are open, many of them are hidden. The sons and daughters of the people with wealth and power go to the same schools and they vacation in the same places. And, you know, whether we call it Sagamore or Under Armour, it continues to drive the division between the 1% who control the wealth and the 99% of the rest of us who are at risk of becoming homeless whenever we lose a job.
And Jeff, I really do appreciate it. I know you're on the road and have to get somewhere in Virginia, so drive safe, and we'll be talking to you on the air live very soon. I deeply appreciate your willingness to always join us in the air when you can.
Thank you very much, and good luck today at the hearing.
Thank you, brother. Always good to hear from you. So let me ask you a political question, and then we're going to go to Bill, our next caller up. And the question is, and Carl, let you start, and then Charlie, please chime in next. Can the Port Covington agreement be delayed? Is the political will there to delay it in time for the new city council to come in, or delay it at least so there can be more hearings and conversations and study? Is that really going to happen? Can that happen?
Well, of course it can happen, as you know, as we used to, our parents used to tell us as children. But anyway, it's not can, but may. Anyway,
very good.
It can happen. I don't know that the political will is here, Mark. I've been run over by this train before. I'm not a saint or have the white hat, but there have been a few of us who have said, slow this down, and maybe there are more than a few. But there is no doubt that there is great political will to force this through the council in the next 10 days. There's no doubt about that. And I don't know that we can stop it unless the citizenry gets so upset and so bothered, not by Port Covington, but by the process that is forcing this to happen before any independent analysis of the numbers, without full transparency of what's on the table, without, frankly, a strong and honest negotiation between the developer and communities and labor around the issue of how it would benefit in the immediate our greater city, how that takes place. There have been attempts to have these community benefits agreement. Obviously, a group of six communities has been able to negotiate one such agreement. But there is a citywide benefit. Obviously, the tax dollars are coming from every portion of the city. And people who are currently unemployed still pay taxes. So even their tax dollars would go into this particular project. And so there needs to be an honorable conversation about inclusive housing, an honorable conversation about the numbers of jobs for real, for city residents, job training,
right,
et cetera.
Charlie?
I appreciate everything that Carl just said. I think that it is a matter of whether or not our city elected leaders are willing to listen to the public on this. Last night we had an event to brief the public on this issue. More than 200 people gathered at Red Emma's. So many people.
Oh, that was last night.
That was last night.
I thought it was tonight.
We had so many people there. They were actually broadcasting on the street, and there were people gathered on the corner of North and Maryland Avenue to listen about this issue. That's how passionate people were. They actually had to kick people out of the event. We've had more than 200 people, 300 people showing up at the hearings at the Planning Commission. One of the reasons Councilman Stokes had to move the hearing today is we're expecting upwards of 1,000 people to show up tonight. We're having a rally at 3 o'clock where working families, the Port Coalition, Build and Build Up Baltimore are all coming together.
Where is that?
That will be outside of the War Memorial Building beginning at 3. We are all of us, in agreement that this deal is lacking. It's lacking in transparency. The process isn't there, that there's not been an adequate financial analysis. And exactly as Carl just said, that there should be a citywide benefits agreement that not only holds our schools harmless, but actually uses a public investment to leverage, to try to address some of the greater ills in our city. We're really at a crossroads here, and Jeff alluded to this. We can decide. Right now is the time when we decide we are either moving forward as one Baltimore or we're going to continue to live in the nightmare of two cities.
Let me go to the phones here very quickly. We only have like 15 minutes left in the segment, and a lot of people have called in. So,
well, I had a story earlier this week. I spoke with Carl last week, and he admitted that he has received veiled threats and threats from the BDC and some other people in who have considered this TIF and already moved it along, that Under Armour is threatening to possibly move out of Baltimore if the TIF isn't passed right away. Now, we have not heard anything from Sagamore on that. They did put a statement out Friday night saying that they're committed to the city. But to have threats like this behind the scene jacks it up a lot, too, at the level of the council, like Carl was saying. And so that is a whole nother element that's involved in the conversation.
And I think it's an attitude about which way we go forward. We go over the phone chain. As I tell you this, I mean, when you look at what Sagamore has said, what they want to do with this, about 12,000 people will come into over 5,000 units and bring in a creative class. And as I said the other day to an event, I was people on the show, and then an event later that I attended, we have a creative class in Baltimore. We don't have to import them from Chicago. They're here. They just happen to be black and Asian and Latino and white and not of great means. They live here now. We don't have to import a creative class.
They're doing it,
and so that's something we have to think about. And also, he said it will boost the fortunes of Cherry Hill and other low income communities by offering temporary construction and permanent jobs. No, that's what always happens. Let's throw some crumbs out. Mm-hmm. Let Cherry Hill, let Westport have a few jobs here and there, and everybody will be happy. That doesn't change the nature of their housing. Doesn't change the nature of what goes on in the corner. Doesn't change the nature of being food deserts.
Exactly.
Doesn't change any of that.
Exactly.
So, and if Freddie Gray grew up in a mixed racial and economic community called Port Covington, he'd be alive and wouldn't be lead poisoned. 410-319-8888 is number. Bill, you're on the air.
Yes, first let me just say hello to everybody.
Good morning.
And I guess the thing I want to say is that even though everybody see the same thing, everybody don't understand the same thing. And I guess my point is this, is that everybody, for many years, people know that developers and big corporations was buying government. But I think that with the regentrification that's been taking place over the last 15, 20 years, then you're getting ready to have these developers and corporations buying a bigger chunk of government. And I think that Port Covington, I mean, when we talk about that, this is just an example for what's to come in the future as black people and poor people is moved out inner cities and urban America, because the prime land in America is in the inner cities. And people that have money and white people want these inner cities back. So poor people and black people is going to be moving out these inner cities. But I think Port Covington is just the beginning of a lot of things that's going to come if it's not stopped.
Bill, I appreciate the call, and I think that there is a move. Yesterday I went to the youth resiliency opening over at the Motor House. Fanon Hill and Navashadeya are doing this incredible work in Cherry Hill in East Cleveland, and they showed the beginning of their film. And one of the, it just was very blatant. They showed Cherry Hill from a distance. You saw Cherry Hill. Cherry Hill was a community that was built for Black War veterans coming home from Korea in World War II. It is right by the water. Mm-hmm. Right by the water.
Right by the water.
So it won't be long before Cherry Hill is next.
We only need to look as far as D.C. 10 to 15 years ago, D.C. started embarking on this same kind of development. I was working with Anthony Williams at the time, and their attitude was very much similar to city leaders now, where it was like, oh, but please come develop here. We'll give you whatever we want. 10 years later, D.C. is now one of the most expensive housing markets in the country. The people, it used to be called Chocolate City. It's no longer Chocolate City. Those people have moved out. They've displaced many of the families that had lived there for generations. And what they brought in was this creative class of young empty nesters, millennials who are making a lot of money. But when it's time for them to have families, and this has been the downfall of Baltimore for years, when it's time to have families, because we haven't invested in schools and we haven't invested in mature neighborhoods, those people will leave Baltimore and they will go out to the counties. The other thing, Mark, that you brought up, Anne Arundel County, Baltimore County, Howard County are jumping up and down cheering the Port Covington plan and proposal because they are convinced that those jobs go to their people. But they don't have to put up a dime.
Let me read this tweet that came in. Melissa tweeted in, and they are very handy-wavy about school funding. Lots of talk about fix, but not about it being temporary. And absolutely right. And Action Brother Jedi tweeted in that see what I mean? Black political leaders, aside from Carl Stokes, are forcing the Port Covington deal through. People do feel that. And let us go to back to the phones. 410-319-8888. Is that Ken? Is he online? No? 410-319-8888 is the number here. Let us go to Rush. You're on the air.
Greetings, Mark, to you and your guests.
Good morning.
Mark, please, give me a few seconds here. I want to give a loud shout-out to my lifelong buddy, Carl Stokes.
Thank you.
He's done yeoman's work for the community. And I can remember us as adolescents sitting on our grandmother's stoops over on the east side, talking about the future of the town and how blacks need to be involved in politics. Well, Carl, you've lived a lifetime dream, and I appreciate you, and I love you, man.
Thanks so much for the shout-out, brother. How are you, Ben?
I'm good, Carl. Hope I'll see more of it. Yeah, I'll let you every time. But what I called about today, Mark, is on the last show it came out, but I called in that day and couldn't get in. But this whole thing, the $550 to $660 million that they're talking about netting, that's the net. The growth of this thing with the placement fees and all that, as you've talked on the last show, is well over $1 billion. And what I wanted to ask Carl directly is, if we did a project that size for this particular thing, isn't the size of the obligation as opposed to the gross aggregate of your property tax income compared some way, and it has to be within a certain percentage to keep our bond rating where it is? Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, our bond, and you talk about the bonds, we should not be indebted for greater than 4% of the overall city budget. We're at probably at 2.5% now. This would bust that number, which is why BDC has asked the state, Medco, which is a quasi-public state agency, to take on the debt. So technically, Medco is taking on this particular debt. Now, whether the bond rating agencies see this debt as invisible to Baltimore, that hasn't been fully answered. In other words, would the bond rating company say, well, we're going to look at Baltimore's debt, but we're going to ignore the fact that this $660 million is a part of their debt because the state has decided that they would carry the books. Now, at the end of the day, if something should explode or go badly and that there is no money to be paid from the development, and we don't wish that at all, for many reasons, but it wouldn't be the state who would be left holding and having to pay. It would fall back on the city. So it's one of those almost shell games out there.
You were going to say, Melody, I want to get back to
the
phones here.
Well, we just had a situation with the Harbor Point TIF. There came for the second sale of bonds before the City Board of Finance, and that was put off for 6 weeks because it turned out that developer Michael Beatty sold the Morgan Stanley building, made a humongous profit off of it, and there was some question on the Board of Finance, if he's making a giant profit off the sale of one building, how does that impact? Why does he need to sell more bonds? So this was a discussion that went on, and where's the safeguards down the road? This is a long-term deal. I think this is another question that's coming into play now, too. Who's going to mine this store over the next 20, 30 years to see that it still stays on track?
That's a long minding.
Absolutely. That's actually one of the things that we're asking for be considered as part of this TIF is that, you know, that we actually measure how much in profit they're making. The very first investment on this goes into parks. The analysis says that just by the city's investment in parks, even when there's no one living there or working there, will increase the value fourfold for Kevin Plank, the value of that property. The city should be getting some of that money. If he's making $400 million on the sale of this property, doesn't that negate the need for such a large public investment? So these are things that we think need to be considered before we ram this through.
Let me go back to the phones at 410-319-8888. Kenneth, you're on the air. Welcome.
How you doing? I've been trying to get through for some time, Mark, so I'm going to have to split up my comments. First, this Court Covington thing is one of, we already know what it is. It's about rich white people. It's not about the poor. They're going to do the same thing, just like you said, to Cherry Hill. It won't be long, okay? Now, switching back over, which is getting breaking news downtown about the trial, is they claim Marilyn Mosby is rushed to judgment. What about this judge? He's rushing to judgment on these cases, you know? He didn't even give this thing a trial. He just said...
No. Hold on. So, can I say stop a second? I'm only interrupting because we don't have a lot of time. I'm going to explain. I think that he didn't do anything. The state's attorney decided not to prosecute the case. Kenneth, the judge had nothing to do with...
They came in today and made the motion.
The state attorney came in and made the motion saying that they're dropping the charges. The judge can't do that. It has no power to dismiss a case like that. And did not. So I just want to make it clear that that's not what happened.
And then you got these lawyers, Warren Brown, Dwight Pettit, Billy Murphy, cheerleading, you know, when they should be, and I know everybody's entitled to their opinion, but it just looks bad. Everybody wants to jump on this lady because she's young and she's trying, okay? I think the judge and the court rushed the judgment, and they're trying to say she rushed the judgment. I understand what you're saying.
I'm just saying you're factually incorrect. The judge did not rush to judgment.
Didn't he just give judgment?
No. The state's attorney just dropped the charges.
The state dropped the charges.
The state dropped it, not the judge. The state dropped the charges.
Marilyn Mosby dropped
the charges. Not the judge. And
she dropped the charges.
Yes.
That's correct.
She dropped the charges. And Dwight...
Well, I can understand a lot of pressure. Anything is all messed up, just like this Fort Covington. We need to stop talking about Fort Covington. They're going to get Fort Covington because it's all about money. Thank you, Mark.
Thank you. So, Carl, do you think we need to stop talking about Fort Covington?
please, we better not.
No, of course we shouldn't. We need to talk about it for several more weeks, frankly, beginning tonight. And we'll just be pulling the cover back a little bit tonight. You know, we have over 600 pages of reports and numbers, blah, blah, blah. Not blah, blah, blah. It's much more important than to have used that phrase. But we should continue to talk about it for several more weeks, if not months.
And Chris just tweeted in, thank you so much for calling out cheering county leaders whose jurisdictions don't have to put up any money for Port Covington. And Chris, thank you for that tweet at Mark Steiner. And Charlie, before we run out of here.
Well, you know, I want to go back to something you said, Mark, earlier about Kevin Plank and his vision. He called this Dubai on the Patapsco. Now, anybody who's been to Dubai will know there's a glittering city, but in that city, it is a particular elite class of people who get to live in those glittering glittering buildings and get to live in that resort environment. It is exclusive. The poor people, the people who come in and clean their houses and service them and work in the retails, they live in run-down hovels outside of that glittering city.
That's true.
And so we have a choice to make here in Baltimore. We can move forward the way where Jack Young wants us to move forward and build this glittering Dubai on the Patapsco and leave Oliver and Sandtown and Berea and some of our most desperate communities, you know, to crumble. But I can guarantee you we will have another uprising. And I cannot say that at that time it won't be well deserved.
And I think that what you said, Charlie, is really important. And if you think that it juxtaposes this with the Freddie Gray trial, what just happened with the officers charged with Freddie Gray's death, that this will mean more Freddie Grays will die.
Yes.
Because the police will have no choice, given they work for the government, to maintain order in poor communities. This is going to increase, not decrease. As a result of something like Port Covington, unless it is forced to become an inclusive project. Correct. Overseeing all the sci-fi, futuristic, dystopian films will become our reality in 40 years. And I think this is not something to take lightly. Well, meet Carl Stokes and everybody tonight, 5:30, War Memorial Plaza. The hearings will take place on Port Covington, chaired by Carl Stokes, who joined us this hour. Carl, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Mark, and the guests.
Appreciate you. Thank you so much. Melody Simmons, reporter for Baltimore Business Journal, who's been covering all of this. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
And Charlie Carter, great to have you in the studio.
Thank you. 3 o'clock, Mark. 3 o'clock rally at War Memorial around Port Covington.
Executive Director of Maryland Working Families. We'll be right back. Don't go away. We got plenty to talk about, folks.